Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back once again to Samuel Adams Returns. Those anti-federalists, they did. They absolutely got it correct, especially from the moral perspective and the concerns that they had for who would become the leaders in these United States under the new Constitution of 1787. And this, yes, it is. Tom Navolis, your host, and I am delighted to be back with you once again. And as we continue this conversation based on those anti-federalists wondering, are we going to have a moral people? Are we going to have moral leadership? Or as we were reading from Melanchthon Smith last week and discussing some of that, especially in the promo, which you can find all of the notes and what is in the blog post at SamuelAdamsReturns.net, it becomes evident that the question would be, who would be the political class? Who would be the ruling class? And would they have a moral capacity to execute the Constitution in justice and righteousness, and in a representative manner that the real needs of the people could be addressed? Instead, as even Melanchthon Smith pointed out at that time, there would be those that would turn into an elite class of people. You would have elitists ruling the government. Well, guess what? Here we are. But one of the areas that Melanchthon Smith and a lot of the other anti-federalists did not take into full consideration is that there would be a national religion, and that national religion would be paganism and humanism. So today's program, as we continue to look at the federal government, especially under this O'Biden administration, has fully established a national religion. And I'm going to go through, because of the descriptions of what paganism and humanism are, is that we're going to talk about today the religion being established as that of pagan humanism. Now, in today's program, as we go through it, in the first segment, I'm going to talk about here that there's an appeal to pagans in America by the American Humanist Society. And we will go through that work in detail, as well as look at the whole idea of what is none other than the late Victorian paganism and the case of the Pagan Review, which was a single-issue periodical in the late 1800s. In the second segment, I plan to take you through some theology of the Enlightenment. We're going to start with an unusual individual for that, which is Baruch Spinoza. And we're going to talk about his definitions of what is or isn't God and the substance of what he was defining, even as a Jew in that period of time, that affects Christianity because he discusses that. And we are then going to do a comparison, comparing Christianity with the new paganism. What's going on with that? And then we're going to do a brief overview of the history of Protestant Christianity from the American Humanist Association point of view, called Good Without God. And then, once again, without any question, we have paganism and humanism in Christianity. And that's going to help establish for next week that whole idea and definition that there are many so-called Christian churches that are humanistic with pagan overtones, and you'll see all of that as we define it from this segment and then into that. And then in the third segment, we're going to finish up with the religious denominations among mainline Protestants by political ideology. It's a Pew report, Pew research paper. And then the real question, could neo-paganism be the new religion? We'll talk about that article. And then finally, a report of this present administration, anti-God, Biden administration spreads atheism abroad, using federal money to spread the new national religion abroad. And then next week, we'll get into a lot more details. But just in the opener here, I just want to remind you all that in the idea of the founding and the First Amendment, religious tolerance, and more importantly, the conscience, your individual conscience, is protected by the First Amendment. Now, the First Amendment does not protect the establishment of a national religion. And that's my point, and that's what I want to continue to drive home with you. And as we go through that, we will continue to look at all of these areas in the limited time that we have, and then bring them to bear next week in finalizing where the money is going from the federal government, maybe even some of the state governments, into supporting the national religion, which is a violation of the First Amendment Establishment Clause. But let's get to this article real quick, because we only have a number of minutes. This article that is there in your notes is an appeal from the American Humanist Society for the pagans in America to join with them on their common ground. Now, what we're going to go through is I'm going to quickly, it says that the idea of paganism and pagans was broadly defined by anybody involved in any religious act, practice, or ceremony which was not Christian, Jews, and Muslim. And it also referred to the terms of anyone outside their religion. So some people define paganism as a religion outside of Christianity, Judaism, Hinduism, Islam, and Buddhism. Others simply define it as being without a religion. So paganism, however, often is not identified as a traditional religion per se, because it does not have any official doctrine. However, it has some common characteristics within its variety of traditions. One of the common beliefs is a divine presence in nature and a reverence for the natural order of life. When we get into this, and I guess from a legal perspective, these are the principles that are being laid out that identify it in a common belief system. Now, we can go through all the different respects in that paganism usually has a polytheistic belief, many gods, but only one, which represents the chief god and supreme godhead, is chosen to worship. We go through that in the Renaissance, and these are important facts, is that in the Renaissance in the 1500s, it was reintroduced, the ancient Greek concept of paganism. Then, during the period of the Reformation, however, it was a temporary halt to pagan thinking. The Greek and Roman classics, with their focus on paganism, were accepted again during the Enlightenment. And I don't know that we're going to get to that other article that I wanted to talk to you about, because we only have 5 minutes left. So paganism experienced another rise, and that's why this article in your notes is very important, in the 1800s and 1900s, when modern forms of Buddhism and Hinduism were growing in popularity. Critical to understand. So it became important again in the ancient civilizations through the 17th through the 19th centuries. and that included revivals of the Druids and so on. But the pagan Renaissance grew out of a variety of sources that came together in the 1930s and 1950s. Paganism today is a movement that consists of many different perspectives. Most American pagan religions have practiced a blend of different traditions, such as the Celtic, Greco-Roman, Native American, ancient Egyptian, and Norse. Just think about that when you look at all the different video games that are out there for kids. It is a tie-in of all these ancient religions. Pagan traditions draw from ancient beliefs as well as from modern beliefs formed in the last century, 20th century. For example, paganism found an ally in ecological and feminist movements of the 60s and 70s. Very important. Pagan philosophies appeal to many eco-activists who also saw nature as sacred and recognized the great goddess as Mother Nature. Then this article goes into the basic beliefs, the basic belief of paganism, and this is important because it ties in with humanism, is a responsibility of beliefs. The most basic tenet of paganism is that it is your own responsibility, not the responsibility of any government, institution, church, or other people, to choose what you believe and regard spiritually, values, ethics, the nature of divinity. Everything is sacred. Most pagan religions believe that everything in the universe is sacred. But the definition and level of sacredness applied to an object will generally vary from one pagan to another. Freedom to choose your deity. You choose it. The scope of consciousness. This is important. Many traditional pagans believe that consciousness extends far beyond the restraints of human form and physical existence. All life forms contain some level of consciousness, from the smallest insect to the giant redwood trees. So this survives death and exists simultaneously or on multiple levels. That's why you have so many people that are working on the transhuman ideas, because they're pagans that believe this, that paganism is some umbrella term that covers all these different spiritual paths. So let's bring it down to a nutshell in what the pagans believe, what the contemporary pagan, all right? And here it is in this outline, is that multiple paths of divine existence as symbolized by many gods and goddesses. Respect and love of Mother Earth essentially as a living being. Physical world and an emanation of the divine is good and enjoyed by all living beings in love and harmony. Ethics and morality are based on avoidance of harm to other beings, including the Earth, because remember, they see it as a living being. Human interdependence implies a need for community cooperation, a strong commitment to personal and planetary growth, evolution, and balance are vital. One's lifestyle must be consistent with one's belief. We don't see that with all the anarchists and that. A minimum of dogma and maximum of individual responsibility in all things are goals to strive for. Now, there's a whole number of level of these principles that are there. And in the last half minute, love for the kinship with nature. Here's a big one, is the recognition of divine, which transcends gender, acknowledging both female and male aspects of a deity. Pagan Federation has all of that resource, a positive morality, and then it goes into talking about all of what is humanism, and then into the depths of the various manifestos. In the end, the humanist are calling for them to come together because they are so much alike in all of these areas, except that of believing in any type of spiritual realm. Come on back in the next segment when we continue in the Christianity side of it. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the second segment of Samuel Adams Returns, Those Anti-Federalists. They got it right. This is Tom Nivolus, your host. And as we were concluding in the last segment, we were talking about that which was happening with the merger, if you will, of paganism and the humanist. So what I wanted to conclude with in this, before we get to the actually the incorporation of humanism and paganism into the various churches that call themselves Christian, is what is humanism from the humanist definition is that it so is with modern humanism. One finds a life stance, or this is important because this is what we talk about a lot, a worldview that is in tune with the modern knowledge, is inspiring, socially conscious, and personally meaningful. It is not only the thinking person's outlook, but that of the feeling person as well. No faith, just feeling. For it has inspired the arts as much as it has the science, philanthropy, as much as critique. And even in critique, it is tolerant, defending the rights of all people to choose other ways, to speak and to write freely, to live their lives according to their own lights. So the choice is yours. Are you a humanist? You needn't answer yes or no, for it isn't an either-or proposition. Humanism is yours to adopt or simply draw from. You may take a little or a lot, sip from the cup or drink it to the dregs. It's up to you. You know, I'll let you draw your own conclusions on all of that, but the bottom line is there's no faith involved in there. There's nothing that deals with the salvation of a person. It's all about who you think you are, whereas you become your own God. And unfortunately, there's much that has happened to establish that. And we'll start with Spinoza. Spinoza was a 17th century Dutch philosopher, and he tried to reinvent religion. He moved away that from something that was based, as they say, superstition. It was based on that and ideas of direct divine intervention to being a discipline that was far more impersonal, quasi-scientific, and also at times serenely consoling. So he was from that Amsterdam area in 1632. He was part of a thriving Jewish community. He was ultimately excommunicated from his Jewish community for his beliefs. And this is very, very interesting. Now, what he did is he wrote a book that is entitled Ethics. It's entirely in Latin, and it was published in 1677. In this, Spinoza directly challenged all the tenets of Judaism and organized religion in general. So here's the outline of it that is part of that establishment of humanism. Even during that transition from in the Reformation period, the middle of it, into then, as we're looking at that Enlightenment period in the late 1600s, 1700s. So here's his first point. God is not a person who stands outside of nature. Well, Calvinism believes that God is in everything. He is over everything. But here Spinoza continues. There is no one to hear our prayers or to create miracles or to punish us for misdeeds. There is no afterlife. Boy, I bet he woke up one day. Man is not God's chosen creature. Huge shift and paganism-like. In fact, humanism in totality. the Bible was only written by ordinary people. Another point he has, God is not a craftsman or an architect, nor is he a king or a military strategist who calls for believers to take up the sword, holy sword. God does not see anything, nor does he expect anything. He does not judge. He does not even reward the virtuous person with a life after death. Every representation of God as a person is a projection of the imagination. Well, he really didn't understand his Old Testament, that's for sure. And obviously, he did not understand the truths of the new covenant in Jesus. He continues, with everything in the traditional liturgical calendar is pure superstition and mumbo-jumbo. However, despite all of this, he did not declare himself an atheist. He insisted that he remained a staunch defender of God. Interesting. What God? Whose God? So God plays an absolute central role in all these ethics, and that is one of the establishments as how humanism and all of the other thinkers that came into play during that period of time. Now, the next I want to drive into and take a quick dive into is what is Christian humanism? Great article in all places of Wikipedia, and defines that the Christian humanism regards humanist principles like universal human dignity, individual freedom, and the importance of happiness, once again, feelings over faith, as essential and the principal or even exclusive component of the teachings of Jesus. Happiness over faith. That's not what Jesus taught about happiness. He taught about faith. The proponents of the term trace the concept to the Renaissance or patristic period, linking their beliefs to the scholarly movement, also called humanism. So some of the initiators of this, when you look at it, is that the origination was in that Christian humanism of the 15th century, and one of the key figures was a Jacob Wimpfeling, John Colet, and Thomas More. Interesting. And then as you move into the first half of the 16th century, with the emergence of the Renaissance and humanistic intellectual figures like Jacques Lefebvre d'Estaples, and especially Erasmus. Now, Erasmus, as we know, he was a heretic, but in fact, this is where and who all of the American Humanist Society in the next article that I was talking to you about, they thought he was the greatest guy in relationship to the Reformation. He comes in here, and from the American Humanist Association, they in this article that I was telling you about, a brief overview of the history of Protestant Christianity, one of the quotes that I have here is that Erasmus also laid the foundation for the Reformation, not only by the translation of the New Testament, but with the spread of his humanistic beliefs. Led by Erasmus, other thinkers as well as the masses of church followers condemned the corruption of the Catholic Church, and he contended that true religion depends on one's inward devotion rather than the outward display of ceremony. And he favored moral reform of the church and de-emphasized the practical didactic ritual. He laid the groundwork for Luther, not necessarily true. And even though he remained a Catholic throughout his life, he never gave up the quest for widespread church reform. So they call him one of the key reformers. And then they go on to talk more about than that of Zwingli and Calvin and then Knox and then what happened under the Presbyterian Reformation. Now, when we continue to look and then try to compare with the Christianity and the new paganism, this is where it gets to every time I talk about feelings over faith, is that the new paganism is the virtual divination of man, the making man divine, the religion of man as the new God. One of its popular slogans, repeated often by Christians, is, quote, "the infinite value of the human person," end quote. Its aim is to build a heaven on earth, a secular salvation. Another word for the new paganism is humanism. So when we have the humanist society now trying to relate to the in-depth practicing pagans, who are those that look at babies are human sacrifice, if you haven't figured it out, when you take and you do abortions. All the LGBTQ, LMSTN stuff is all part of paganism, and it is accepted within humanism. The whole thing on transgenderism is also paganism, because as I was reading to you, and that's there in the notes, is there's no male or female. There can't be. If God is not male or female, how could there be a male or a female? Where God explicitly shows himself as Father, as the male figure, all throughout the Old Testament, as well as who did Jesus relate to. So in this, in the secular salvation, another word for the new paganism is that of humanism. The religion that will not lift up its head to the heavens, but stuffs the heavens into its head. So a second ingredient of the old paganism that's missing in the new paganism is objective morality. C.S. Lewis called it the Tao in his prophetic classic, The Abolition of Man. To the pre-modern man, pagan as well as Christian, moral rules were absolute, unyielding, and unquestionable. There were also objective discovered rather than created, which they are now all created, and this has changed. The new paganism is situational and pragmatic. It says we are the makers of moral values. It is not only finds the moral law written in the human heart, but also by the human heart. It acknowledges no divine revelation, thus no one's value can be judged right or wrong. So the new paganism's favorite scripture is judge not. The only judgment is the judgment against judging. The only thing wrong is the idea that there is really no real wrong. So what we have is the no transcendence of a God. Everything is related to yourself. It all circles around yourself. The humanism is tied in with the modern psychology, and as we're seeing is that this new paganism that we have upon us, I think, is really explicit in the idea that there's no revelation. So guess what? There is no right or wrong. You make it up as you go, and the fact that you are God. There is no other God. In fact, humanists also take it, so that's a new paganism, but humanists take it one more step and, yeah, there is no God. You are it, and you only live for this moment. Now, as a Christian, that is fully debatable, and we know the truths in fact, but this is what we're dealing with, and we see this in the universities. We see it in the thought that's brought out in different programming. We see it in the trans movement. We see it in abortion. We see it in the halls of your state house, in every city, county, state, and federal bureaucracy. It's there. It's easy to say, oh, well, that's communism, when in fact what we're dealing with is the national religion. And we're going to come back to it even more when Sam Adams returns in the third and final segment for today's programming. So we'll talk to you in a couple moments. See you then. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to this third and final segment of Samuel Adams Returns. Those anti-federalists got it right in. This is Tom Navolis, your host. And I would make an appeal to you, if you find this programming interesting, that you not only go to the website at samueladamsreturns.net to see the references that are there available for each and every program, but additionally, if you would, we would greatly appreciate any contribution that you would be willing to make. Now, to continue with all of this information, I am going to spend a significant amount of time on the Pew Report, and then in the last 5 minutes, we'll talk about the neo-paganism as the new religion of America, and you're going to have to go to the article to get through the detail of it yourself. And I will tell you that there is a report out there right now that is by a former congressman, actually, that is dealing with, and it's recent, it's this past week, with the O'Biden administration in taking and funding, and this report takes and talks about how the O'Biden administration is funding atheism abroad. They're paying for it. It's amazing. So this was in late June. A Republican lawmaker wrote a letter to the president because of the State Department grant giving $500,000 to organizations committed to the practice and spread of atheism and humanism. Hello, there it is. Namely in South Central Asia and the Middle East and North Africa. So you go to that article yourself. I did that first so that you would go to it. Now, the Pew report that I'm talking about is titled About the Religious Landscape. It's a study, very deep study. It was initially done in 2007 and then redone in 2014. It covers all 50 states, and it looks at interviews with more than 35,000 Americans from all over the country. And in this research, that's pretty significant. They went through and they are looking at the religious landscape. In this study, it talks about the religions by denomination, family, and so on, so that we have Christians in a general sense makes up about 70.6% of the nation. If you look at evangelicals, is about 25.4, mainline Protestants, and they get into the deeper qualification of this in this study is 14.7. Historically, black Protestants is 6.5. Catholics are 20.8%. Mormons, 1.6. Orthodox Christians are 0.5%. Jehovah's Witnesses are 0.8%. And then whatever other Christians are is a 0.4. Non-Christian faith is 5.9% of the population or the sampling. Jewish is 1.9, Muslim 0.9, Buddhist 0.7, Hindu 0.7, other world religions 0.3, other faiths 1.5. Unaffiliated religious nuns is 22.8%. Atheist is 3.1. Agnostics are 4. And nothing in particular is 15.8. And the nothings pretty much comprise, and they have a number of different charts in here on what that is. It's by age distribution, as well as then it goes into the generational particulars and what that looks like, gender compositions, as well as racial and ethnic compositions amongst all of those. And they do this with many of the other ones. Immigrant status, among nothing in particulars, is that it is the third generation or higher or longer is 75% of that population. Very, very interesting. Income distributions, it goes educational distributions, and so on. It's just very, very detailed. And here's what is interesting in the belief in God among nothings in particulars, which is that large is a large group. Believe in God, absolutely certain, is 36%. Believe in God, fairly certain, is 26%. Believe in God, not at all certain, 12%. Believe in God, don't know, 1%. Do not believe in God is 20% of that group, or other, don't know if they believe in God at all, is at 5%. So it becomes very interesting to see what this all means in that larger categories. But in the categories that I'm interested in discussing with you are not just that in the demographics. What I'm interested in, and it's not in what's here in the topics and questions in beliefs and practices, but the social and political views. And to take you through this in particular is political ideology. The political ideology portion of this is interesting because in the whole social and political views, political ideology goes amongst all these different religions. And the chart is there. I'm trying to figure out how to put that chart here in this video as I record the program. But another key area is in protecting the environment on how that is religiously played out and what percentage of people think that we need that are in this that are tied to the environmental movement that have some church connections and even with solid or so-called solid denominational Christianity. One of the largest groups that is answering the question as the views about environmental regulation by religious group, the stricter environmental laws and regulations cost too many jobs and hurt the economy. We have definitely your evangelical Protestants. Stricter environmental laws and regulations are worth the cost. Some of the largest groups on that are, let me see here. Boy, I'm trying to look at that. It doesn't get, are the unaffiliated religious. Same here is that even some Orthodox Christians believe in that, 66%. Muslims as well, this is a stricter environmental laws are worth the cost. Mainline Protestants, there's 56% believe that. It's amazing. In the Jewish community is 71%. Jehovah Witnesses even, there's 54%. The historically black is 58%. Hindu, obviously, they would believe that it's worth the cost. Evangelical Protestants are 45. The largest, again, are Buddhist up at 77. And then Catholics also believe that the regulations are worth the cost. It's just amazing to me in that because it's so tied to humanism and paganism. So there's a lot of your ties. And then there is the larger on religious denominations, Protestant by political ideology, and how many are on the left and what denominations are on the left. It just blows me away in this chart and the percentages. Obviously, when we look at the largest groups that call themselves conservatives or moderate, liberal, or don't know, some of the largest groups are, believe it or not, liberal, the United Methodists are only 22, but there's 33% of them that call themselves conservatives. 29% of the United Methodists call themselves moderate. The link for this chart and this report is obviously there at SamuelAdamsReturns.net. But what we're seeing in totality for this week's program is from the Pew Report alone, it starts to establish this idea that humanism and the ideas of paganism are so indoctrinated in our educational system that it's easy for believers in biblical mechanisms to and biblical truth and principles to be swayed. Now, I do want to take a quick look here at could neo-paganism be the new religion of America? So this goes into witchcraft and pagan spiritualities are on the rise, especially within the mainstream youth culture. We're seeing this so much. And this report was done in 2019, September 2019. And the Americans are turning away from organized religion, and pagan spirituality is gaining popularity and visibility. So it's all about, although it isn't a homogenized religion, groups identify with neo-paganism shared the uniting principles. Witchcraft, which is traditionally associated with women, finds its strength and new life in the feminist movement. Okay? Oh, boy. So if you take and you look into Urban Outfitters, and you're sure to find all the tarot cards, Beginner's Guide to Crystal Spell Books, Barnes & Noble's, Aaron Murphy's, and so on, The Green Witch is among many witchery books, and that's going on and on. Although neo-pagan or contemporary pagan beliefs have steadily gained popularity since their introduction in the 60s, the past few years have seen neo-paganism and Wiccan beliefs proliferate in the mainstream American culture. And so this is what's going on. It's taking and you're seeing this rise in this idea of spirituality, and we're experiencing these new age aesthetic trends. They're running three large comprehensive religious surveys from 1990 to 2008. Connecticut's Trinity College found that religion of the Wicca grew a considerable amount over that period of time. Picking up the baton, we go back to the Pew Research Center, found that 0.4% of Americans, around 1 to 1.5 million citizens, identify as neo-pagan. Now, some of what I want to bring into this is that humanism identifies more, but the underpinnings of all of this, what we see with the goth, what we see with everything else, ties into that which then gets the funding. And when we're seeing, we're going to talk specifically next week, when we look at the funding for a lot of the programs that are here from the PBS and on neo-paganism, on paganism and humanism in general, it becomes extremely interesting to see that church, guess what? The mission field is not elsewhere. The mission field is in the need for reformation in the churches as well as in the general population. There is in your notes about how Christianity overcame paganism of the Romans and the Greeks. I highly suggest that you look at that, and that is because the true gospel of Christ was preached. Sam Adams understood that very, very clearly as being identified as the last Puritan. Come on back next week when Sam Adams returns.